Hello, welcome to the post game. We just told a story inspired by the prompt. You rushed in blindly, he treated you kindly.
We got the, and now, the first half.
we're gonna talk about where we took that one.
There were some moments of kindness.
Instant reactions. Sprinkled. Okay, so but a prompt. You rushed in blindly, he treated you kindly. What we could probably count the moments of kindness on one hand.
You said instant reactions. First thing for me was we had an animal involved, and early on it was sort of, okay, this is just, we're basically digging into true animal nature. We're making this animal a character, but we're sticking with normal animalness. But sure enough, by the end, it was.
So where did it change for you? Was it in the homemaking scene, or was it when the bear started like being confused about the chase and like that first encounter?
No, I think all of that was sort of consistent with true bear behavior, even if we were storyizing
just
it
a little bit personified, but not too crazy. Okay.
Until it became a homemaker. That was, I think we were on the right side of it.
I felt like the boulder was already heading down the hill when the bear started questioning what to do.
I was a little frustrated with that story, but the good things I liked about it, I felt like the theme of just sort of like wildness and domesticity and
was
kind of the fun part about it, and you know, like honesty, like watching all those different, like, it was clear pretty soon that none of these characters were going to be like particularly great. The kids were pretty innocent, but like the counselors were all kind of just, everybody was going crazy and bloodlust and murder and everything, you know? So like, that wasn't the arena that we were working in, really. It was more like the, what does it mean to be a bear? What does it mean to be a person? You know, they're reaching their sort of ancestral instincts in these different sort of dysfunctional ways. And I thought that was interesting.
We call this part of the post game the accidental depth,
like
or the
post facto
symbolism attribution. I think it, we've wrestled with this before, but I mean, I think, I don't remember, it doesn't really matter, it was a reasonable thing to say there were 20 campers, but then we had a lot of individuals to potentially deal with. We didn't have that many, you know, main characters, so to speak, the bear and the counselors and a couple of the kids. But I do think you could argue that it made sense, but we slipped into, okay, we got to sort of like wrap this up or narrow it down. And so murdering killing people willy-nilly, that's certainly a little bit of a pattern there.
I don't, well, is it though? Because we, for a long time, we didn't kill too many people. Like, I feel like we kind of gave ourselves permission to get like gory a couple stories ago. And then suddenly there's just been a lot of like murdering. Cause we're like, you know what? The bear killed both of them.
I think we have done that. Yeah. I guess I don't know numerically. It feels like we have gotten to a point sometimes. And I think we've talked about this in previous post games where there is the improv principle at play, which is sort of, hey, if that's what makes sense, just like, don't dance around it. Just do it, you know, like don't, and deal with the consequences. But then also sometimes it feels a little like
it can
cheap
be counterproductive.
Or
yeah, cheap or why counterproductive.
Why does that always make sense to us? Is the question. To have their throats get slashed. Okay. Are there any other patterns? So we had the animal. We're very fond of having animals in our story, especially animals that are very personified.
You know, Corey, like death. Wacky, like kind of campers. We've done campers before, you know, or like summer camp. There's something about the kind of like isolated community in the middle of nowhere kind of setting, you know? Yeah, we did. Our story had the campers with the boat contest, the rite of passage boat trip.
They weren't campers. They were villagers.
Well, all right. Villagers. a little group of people in the woods.
Sure.
We had a black bear story too.
Did we?
That was our like psychological thriller where the bloodhound had been killed.
Right.
And we had a whole conversation about Deus Ex Machina Bear Edition.
Right.
For the listeners at home, we had a very long discussion on the Discord about whether it should be Deus Ex Ursa or Ursa Ex Machina, and opinions seem to be pretty evenly split towards the end.
We've had mushroom foraging.
I almost said something about a string cow, but that's only you guys would know what I was talking about.
All right, I've got a road not taken, which is that I was imagining Felix and or multiple campers following Jason, and actually that they were going to keep going, that he was going to go and either that they would get out or that they would perish or that they maybe eventually would bring them back to the camp. But I was not anticipating the quick reversal.
Yeah. So that's interesting, you know, and it's like, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, maybe I did kind of negate the thing that was happening by having, you know, the camper discovers Jason and then says, oh, you're an asshole, and leaves. I thought that was significant because they had like a breakup, they had a thing. And then eventually, maybe it pays off because it changed Jason. He came back. I guess then that was negated because the campers were like, too late, buckaroo. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. It felt really right in the moment to be like, oh, this is why this happens, is so that Big Felix will basically
change
change instead of it I guess like the road not taken was a version of the story where we actually explore like what happens when these people try to get out of the situation.
Yeah. Well, and frankly, I didn't have, I mean,
it was a hard story.
The best version I had of that was they die in the woods or they come back or something. So I'm not sure it would have actually added much to keep him on that trajectory.
I feel embarrassed to say this, but I almost wonder if sometimes we're painting ourselves into corners with like the frame of the story at the beginning, you know, like I think that's probably just a lack of imagination on my part really, but it felt like 20 minutes into the thing, I was like, great, we're in the woods, there's some campers, they're starving, you know, like what really are the options here? You know, like everyone's going to either go crazy and die or they get rescued or what, you know, that's why I say it's a lack of imagination.
Or a bear and one of the counselors ends up in a domestic situation.
You could narrate any story in
it's
that
true.
Voice
yes,
and it would
right.
sound really dumb. Like, all right. So
yeah, that's why
there's a Jedi it. And... goes to this swamp planet.
It's true.
Meets a little green guy.
I had the same thing because I was like, okay, the only road not taken for me was like a
story not in the woods with no campers.
Nobody's somebody, starving.
They wake up and it was all just a dream, and actually it's a totally
oh, that's what we should have done.
Next time, guys.
It's going to be like a prospector character or something, like walks into camp, and he's also lost and starving. That was like, and again, like them staving off into the woods, like there was no, I had no next step of where that goes or why that's interesting, which is why I didn't bring it up, but.
Well, so maybe this is a good exercise, right? Because... Let's get into the edit room here.
Yeah,
how do we actually, if we go back to, I mean, I don't know what the right moment is.
After we find out that they are actually starving, but they haven't told the kids, we've got Jason and Welvin introduced, and Sarah. We have their basic personalities, but they haven't gone off hunting yet.
Okay. So what are big picture arc options for how the story goes? Okay, one, they go on like a big journey together to escape. Like the whole team makes a huge trek and maybe they all make it. Maybe a lot of them die along the way or stuff happens along the way, but like some of them eventually make it. So maybe that's one version is the journey out.
I was sort of invested in the three counselor characters and like their right. flaws. And so then like, I was thinking like how we slowly reveal to the kids the situation they're in and how the kids handle it and how the counselors handle it. I was kind of thinking along those lines.
So it's more about the like psychological journey yeah. of how they navigate the being trapped less than.
Well, yeah, in part because of what we're trying to like work on as storytellers mm-hmm. is like to not just have it be an action movie or whatever I wanted it to be like
yeah.
some
yeah.
character development.
Well, I think that's good. When you have, so you have the premise of, they're trapped and it's a, you know, live or die situation. And then we have, like you said, the three counselors. It's not just exploring what happens to them psychologically, but it's sort of, the big question is, how do you survive? What do? How do you respond to this dire situation? And I feel like we kind of had a setup where it's like, well, maybe there are three roads. You've got the guy who wants to leave and maybe he goes alone, or maybe he'd bring some campers with him. You've got the counselor who wants to tell everyone the truth. So I guess that would mean, yeah, Jason leaves on his own. That was his plan. Sarah's plan was to tell everyone and I guess work together. And then Welvin was the one that was panicking, I guess his option. But like, that's where I thought kind of, that was the shape that I thought we had, is we know the counselor's the best. So maybe there are three different ways of reacting to this, very, very severe dilemma.
Maybe that this is, so I think this is good because I'm really glad that you two were keyed in on the makeup of those characters and the things that we had defined about them, because I do think that is compelling. And I might be, at least in this situation, maybe in general, a little too focused on narrative action, right? Like I might be more in the kind of action movie camp. So maybe a good thing for us to think of for the time being is to sort of keep an eye on, like, are we doing both? Right? Like, are we relating to what's defining about these characters and exploring that and letting that grow and change and affect the story while also having it relate to some action and some narrative things that are happening?
Well, right? That should be, is that like when you know something about the character, you
don't throw it away.
Action comes from that, you know, whatever defines them, they should take action that is, you know, pointed in that direction. And so that's what I do. I agree that action is where it's at, Shin. But
when we were like, you know, halfway through it or whatever that means, the story, you know, like she'd been shot in the arm, he'd been hit by the bear. From the perspective of sort of like bringing it home or like thinking big picture arcs, did you guys maybe I just am tired today. But I was like, I don't know. They all die. They all escape. Who cares? You know, like I was having a hard time.
They're campers in the woods.
Who cares?
I think it in a way, it is a thing that we've talked about a few times trying to address. I think like we opened up a lot. We opened up multiple avenues in a way, right? We had like Welvin and the fish and the bear. We had the injured kids that were hunting. We had the kids on the shore. You know, all of a sudden we had a really complicated narrative thing to try to satisfactorily resolve. And I think we're getting away from what we were trying to do a little bit, which was to keep the stories tighter and narrower. And that, I think that can be a little overwhelming where it's like, it's really hard especially in a shorter period of time to like bring all that together in a satisfying way. So we might be opening too many doors.
I've got we can have a new segment here in the post game called you naughty boy, where you call a storyteller out on something that fucked everything up. So and I know I feel like I can tell this to
Drew. I got one for myself.
Oh yes. Yeah? I wonder if it's the same one. I feel like I can tell you this, Drew, because you don't give a shit what anyone says, but it's when I had just introduced that she had a plan. If there's no salmon, she's going to tell the campers. And you were like, yeah, that's true. But first she had to go hunting.
I was so committed to that.
I think you had already thought of that. And you were just like, I've got to say it. And so okay. Was that your naughty boy?
That wasn't. But yeah, that was... yep, it was exactly what you said. I was sort of like 20 seconds before I spoke, it was already like the gears were already turning and I just kind of couldn't stop the train. And so, yeah, I completely derailed you.
You just couldn't.
I chose not to stop the train.
Okay. You naughty boy.
Thank you. That's what I wanted. Naughty boy. No, I was going to call myself out for, I mean, it sounded like you were going there too, but, I pushed the bear clearly over the ledge with the with the recliner. No,
so, it was already.
I think we were already there at that point.
It had to go there because the previous scene is when I took it to like the bear noticed that this looked like it started playing the. Yeah. You know, I think it snapped its fingers to be like, "Can you mind lighting the fire there, sugar,
honey?"
So I was the naughtiest one there.
Yeah, I think you naughty boy. That's good.
How naughty was me ending it where I did?
I was torn because I was sort of like, it's like.
Because we were in the woods, more. There's some campers and people dying.
And it's like everybody had almost died and there's just some kids left and it's like, are they going to die or are they going to...
I wanted
that's exactly
more.
Exactly where we were. You're right.
I wanted more, but we had that sort of like long dead space. And I was like, this is my opportunity to be like, I'm going to insist that we do something here with like the campers or the kids or whatever. And ultimately I was like, I don't have anything to really make it worthwhile. So I knew where you were going, and I was like, I'm not gonna stop it.
So there's this. So we talked about the accidental depth, or like it's like the accidental point of the story, because of course we don't know where we're going until we tell it, and we don't. And there's something about how the ending just makes you think, okay. So what does that mean about what this story is about?
Yeah, retroactively, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I feel like the way it ended there, it's like, oh, this is about the failure of, like...
leadership.
The adult establishment, you know? Like, in various ways, the campers let... or the counselors let the campers down. And whatever the fate of the campers is after this fact, like, they are at least rejecting that, you know, authority. So it's like, I don't know, in a way, like, that's... we kind of told that story effectively, right?
Yeah, we got to that point. Yeah. They had crossed over. Who knows what happened from that point forward, but they were charting their own path.
Truth. And I was glad the bear like just walked off into the woods confused too. It was sort of the same, like the bear's sort of evolutionary authority being the humans. And the bear's like, what? I'm not going to live in a house. What am I doing here? With my punctured eye. That was never addressed again.
Can we wrap it up with some spellings?
Oh my gosh.
Sure.
Start with Sleesa, I guess. I had imagined Sleesa as like a Gaelic spelling of some, so it never really crystallized in my head, but...
you're thinking something sort of in the like S-L-E-O-I, like...
Yeah, S-L-I-E-S with a backwards apostrophe A or something like that.
Is that a name that you've heard before, Drew?
No.
Okay.
It was like typical...
They never are.
I've talked about this before where it's like, yeah, where the name is arbitrary, but I get stuck. Like I have to make a choice. And then it's like, I'm just like, just cycling through a million different, like normal names. And all of them seemed like there's something associated with them. So I just start speaking without having anything to say. And then it's just like whatever syllables come
out. Mine, I do that too. Mine was Jant. Yeah. did I need to say that?
I'm so scared of doing that that I'm like, Roger. Whatever.
And then Casey and the other character named Casey. Yeah. So it's just like a gibberish word. One reason I like it is because we kind of like a diverse cast. You don't want to have like a it's you know, Steve and Roger again.
John, Paul, and Mary. Yeah.
I don't, those names don't come to me. I actually don't know very many foreign names,
like
you know,
non-Western European names or whatever.
They certainly don't, it's a weird space to go crawling in your head. Yeah. So,
and then,
the
and then I also
name
feel
kind
subconscious.
Of like sounds like it's from somewhere else, but you don't have to get tied up. Totally. And now I've got to be responsible for representing all
of
Pakistan.
I'm going to pull out some stereotypically race associated name and like use that or whatever.
So you can just decide for yourself where Jant was from and why she was so good at numbers.
Jant was definitely Scandinavian.
That's on you.
I had Sleesa. I think I vacillate a little bit, but I think basically I actually settled on Lisa with an S, S-L-I-S-A.
I had S-L-E-E-S-A.
And yeah, that was my other.
I felt so bad that I could never remember her name. I was pretty sure it was a, like a totally invented name, but I was like, I am really insulting wherever all the real life Sleesas. So I'm feel grateful to learn this.
Yeah.
Welvin.
W-E-L-V-I-N.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get one of those classic Andy vowel swapperoos in the V-A-N or something.
Welvind with a D on the end of it.
Welvind. That's hilarious. I want to name somebody Welvind.
Who, let's see, Felix, that's an obvious one. I feel like there's one other. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, Jason. Sarah with Jason. An H for me.
Yeah, with an H.
Yeah. Casey, by the way, props to you for... when you said there was one camper named Felix, I mean, I just had the dumb joke to say it. There's actually two, but we're talking about one right now. I thought you rolled with that really well. And then, like, Felix R was the perfect way to kind of piggyback on that and make what I said true. So
I screwed that up because I realized after the fact that you had said Felix R, but it didn't register. So I said Big Felix without, so I kind of like doubled up on that joke accidentally because I didn't process Felix R.
Right. But it was a good, happy accident because instead of like Felix R and Felix K, we had like an asymmetrical pair. So that was, that was hilarious. So everybody's funny. Saying in the comments, loved it.
And even more so, loved hearing you talk about it for 3 minutes.
More asymmetrical pairs,
thought you weren't
going
to get there. So glad to see right at the end.
Glad
of the
I stuck around.
And the comment was already written and I was about to post it. So glad you got to it.
We'll always be there for you.
I'm a little disappointed in myself.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I did this twice. I should have committed to the camp song and actually tried to make up a camp song rather than sort of like blibbity blobbity blind it.
You know what? A lot of camp songs have things like that.
Your camp song actually sounded very realistic.
And a ricky dicky dink and we're passing the thing.
I don't know. I should have done
it. I did what you're saying. I was like, and we're rowing in a boat on the lake. And
yeah, yours sounded legit. I was like, I should have gone camp that's
a flippity-dip-a-doop-dop-do and a flippity-dip-a-doop-dop-dee.
Well, you're all very kind, but I feel like...
Seriously, you should record that thing, man.
You should start a camp.
I think I had an obligation to do better. And
camp hickory dickory doody dang it. No, you didn't let anyone down but yourself. You're being too hard on yourself. I'm not giving you a naughty boy for that, don't you?
Okay.
Don't you reach for that naughty boy paddle.
I already got one. I'm getting greedy. Got one.
Save some for the rest of us. Oh, boy. Well, at least no one with like a lime. You know what, Casey? I'm glad that the prospector didn't show up.
You get a preemptive naughty boy.
You may have thought that.
You get a good boy. You get a good boy for keeping
the prospector.
That's
where we went wrong was by not having a starving prospector wander into
the
camp.
I elected not to bring him in.
I thought that was like a road not taken. Like
it was a road
and
not taken.
We had a real opportunity in the beginning.
No. No, I was just like, I could do that. I mean, oh, okay. Here, I'll own up to my half naughty boy here. In that, if the opportunity had cropped up right then when I had that idea, I probably would have done it. But very quickly, something changed, and I couldn't. And then very quickly, I was like, yeah, no, that shouldn't have done that. I was just what I was trying to find my way out of, and maybe this is a bad instinct, but I wanted the story to be a little less predictable than, I mean, it wasn't predictable, obviously, but the scenario of kids in the woods trying to escape or whatever, I mean, like, come on, but I didn't want like aliens to land or like, you know, it's the kid to be a demon who, you know, is possessed. And so I didn't want to get crazy, but like,
I support both of those feelings that you had.
Okay. Yeah, but you think like, but the like Lord of the Flies going native.
Yeah, I was kind of like,
so obvious.
I wasn't inspired by that. So I was just thinking like, you know, maybe, maybe somebody else shows up and it's like, oh, he's going to rescue us. But then he's like, no, I'm starving and lost too. And then there's weird interactions between this like misfit prospector who doesn't have any friends and lives in the woods and these kids that are kind of innocent. And, you know, there might be interesting kind of character dissonance there, you know.
It's a pilot for a long running sitcom.
It's like a modern day.
I can see the opening credits. Yeah. And Stephen Tobolowsky as the prospect.
I'm sorry. I know things were kind of wrapping up there, but we start on this exercise of like, how would we maybe have rewritten it? You know, if we could go back to that moment.
We didn't get very far with that, did we?
I do think that's probably a good exercise for us to go through when we have stories that end in a way that feels kind of like, that wasn't really super satisfying. I think that's a good mental practice. And so here's a defense of your prospector move here, which is, okay, so maybe one version is the kids don't go on a journey, but they figure out a way to signal their problem or get help or do something without like leaving the camp. So it's all about like constructing or building something or making an effort to like get the signal. Or this has a little bit of Baderson of old, maybe flavor to it, but like maybe part of it is just like not getting too, other than our main characters, maybe we don't, it's okay. Maybe the prospector shows up. Maybe the bear comes and lives like in camp. Maybe some other campers that are trapped show up. Like maybe the camp becomes a place that starts to like accumulate people and it becomes a self-sufficient city of its own. And
rescuers kind of show up, but then they are disabled somehow and
they get trapped. Yeah.
Or decide to live there.
Yeah. So maybe that's a, yeah. So that's just another version.
That sounds fun. Yeah. This is a really interesting thing that about that, like, the weird gravity toward, okay, someone's gonna go feral, or they're all going to, like, where I think in my mind I was also skeptical of that, and like that felt obvious, but also I don't know, when it happened, it kept, you know, Kevin went there and it kind of felt okay, despite, you know, the misgivings prior to it. And there's something, so listener, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think fearing the obvious can cripple the storytelling. And like, there's something to be said for, obviously it pays off to, what's the word? Defy expectations. Obviously, it pays off to surprise people and defy expectations, but I don't know. Sometimes it pays off to like just take it where it seems like it wants to go.
If you're constantly defying expectations, you're basically doing like an absurdist play, right? Yeah. There has to be a level of coherency and comprehensibility.
And that all feels very wise. Like the constraint. You get a wise boy. I think the constraint, maybe that the reason I was kind of like, and they're in the woods, it's like from the Campbellian sort of like, how many archetypical stories are there? Is this one, you know, I don't know what this is. Like,
this is up there. This is in the ranks of
like classic archetype. And yeah. And so
it's
like,
as good as is what I'm saying. It would be taught. It's part of the canon.
I think that was the straitjacket I was sort of like bridling against. I mixed two metaphors there, but I, you know, like, okay,
horses wear straitjackets too.
We're in Lord of the Flies or whatever. Like, what's the classic, like, don't try to subvert expectations too much kind of story, and how many ideas are we going to come up with in that framework? And I think, my instinct was just like, well, what if it's different than that? What if it's not that story? What if
there wasn't a prospector in Lord of the Flies?
I'll show them. He'll be a prospector, but he's a musician at the same time, and he's homesick.
I feel like this, I'm going to say this just because I thought of it, and I don't know if this is a can of worms or a dead end or something valuable.
Hey, don't mix metaphors on us, okay?
But it occurs to me,
this is hard enough as it is.
When you talked about that, for some reason my head flashed to, and I haven't watched The Simpsons in like a million years, but I kind of have this recollection of Simpson, like a Simpsons episode, like this probably exists. There's probably a Simpsons episode that's called like Lord of the Bart or something like that, or like Bart of the Flies, where they totally take that archetype, that story, those things, and like kind of embrace it all in the sense that a lot of the things you expect to happen are going to happen, but then in that context, do something funky and weird and have like a weird, different, unusual, specific story that is not just recreating Lord of the Flies, right? Yeah. Like,
right. Which is like maybe, basically 99% of art is like take a pattern, take a form, do it, but make it
fuck
new.
With it. Yeah. So we did that.
Well, I guess we nailed it when you think of it that way.
I think that's how we ended up on that top 100 works of Western literature list with this story.
I mean, right before the deadline, because
they were listening live
today.
And the stakes were high.
We're about to decide, but we heard you're doing one more story, so we're going to tune in.
We rolled the dice and it paid off. So
they heard rushed in blindly. He treated you kindly. And they were like,
hold on, hold the presses.
is there a new Lost in the Wilderness sort of story in the works here?
Let's find out.
Because our list has room for one more of those.
Well, thanks you two, you naughty boys.
Good work.
And thank you, listener. You rushed in boldly, and I hope you feel that
we treated you coldly.
Do you exist, listener?
We hope so. Only time will tell.
All right.
Okay. Adios.
Bye, guys.
Bye.